Well, SpaceX this morning just successfully launched its first Crew Dragon capsule to the International Space Station, and now the mission is underway. This flight, known as Demo 1, is unscrewed, but if it all goes well, Crew Dragon will likely carry astronauts to and from the orbiting for the first time this summer. That's pretty remarkable. It's really, really doing well. This privatization of space is something. Anyways, we're going to come back in a moment. More Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Open Lines here on Coast to Coast. Let's go to Greg in Alabama, east of the Rockies. Gregory, hello there.
Oh, hello, Mr. Norrie. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I was calling because I used to know a man in New Orleans who told me that he had been a horror host there, and the character he used was called the Marquis Macabre. And he also appeared in the movie Easy Rider, which was filmed there.
Classic movie, too.
Yes, he appeared in the sequence that was filmed in the cemetery. And I think they were having an LSD trip or something. And I believe he's like a hallucination. He wears a dark suit and tie. And he seemed to be reading from the book, maybe the Bible. And then he goes skipping off under a black umbrella. But he doesn't have any, you don't hear his voice because music is just playing. But he appears like just as an image in the movie. But I think he was hired by Dennis Hopper, who saw him in a bar in the French Quarter reciting Shakespeare.
He liked him that much.
Yes. But his character was the Marquis Macabre, and about 40
I love
years
that
ago,
name.
It was around 1980 or 81. I was living there, and I worked in a record store, and he came in and was shopping for a cassette tape to use to help him memorize the role of Shakespeare's Richard III.
Aha! Did you recognize him when he came in?
No, I never saw him. That was the first time I met him, and he told me all about having hosted the horror show and the Marquis Macabre. And he has a friend with him who was like his co-host or his sidekick for the show. And the person that they were both there together in the record store, and they did their whole opening routine for me right there on the spot. And I ran into them a couple of times after that, like in the French Quarter, and they were more than happy to do the routine for me again. There was too much. One time I was in the A&P grocery store on Royal Street, and they did it for me in the produce section.
Sounds like a nice guy.
Oh, yeah. But it was called the Marquis Macabre, and I think his name was Paul Ernest. His name does not appear in the movie credits for Easy Rider, but I think it was Paul Ernest.
Okay, if that's worthwhile. You know, and some people are so approachable, others really aren't. You know, out here in Hollywood, it's just like an unwritten rule. You don't go up to anybody, but, you know, some of them are pretty friendly, others aren't. I run into Larry King a lot, and I think he remembers I've been on his show a couple times in the old days, but he hangs around this area quite a bit. Saw Mel Gibson. Classy guy. Brad Pitt's a great guy. Nice guy. And he's from Missouri. Back to the phones we go. Let's go next to Steve in Ontario, California. Steven, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mr. Norrie.
How is Steve today?
Oh, pretty good. I work nights driving truck around Los Angeles, California.
At least you don't have a lot of traffic like the daytime folks.
That's one of the reasons I do it.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, but I was thinking of haunted movies. You guys were talking about them earlier. The movie The Haunting with Liam Neeson.
Classic.
Classic. And it is, every time I see it, it's just scary. It just tears me apart.
And he's a great actor, too.
Oh, yeah. And the bed comes alive, and at the end where the wall comes alive with all the children.
Yeah.
And
coming at him.
And the gargoyles at the end of the staircase, they come alive, and just, it's a classic movie, and I love it.
It is one of the best. Appreciate that. Let's take a few more calls here. John is in Mustang Ridge, Texas, west of the Rockies. That's not west of the Rockies, but that's where he is. Hey, John.
Hey, George. I haven't seen you since 2005 and 2006 when you were down here for TalkFest in Austin.
Oh, my God. With Alex Jones.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I really enjoyed meeting you both years that you came down here for TalkFest.
It's a beautiful area. We may end up in Houston maybe this year, but perhaps next year for a live show. You got to come see us.
I will definitely do that. It's only about 2 or 3 hours away. I did want to say, you know, I listen to you almost every night, and then I realized after we had met that you were born at Mount Carmel Hospital.
Yep. I was. That's a small world.
It is a small world. Do you remember? I love the Twilight Zone and Sir Graves Ghastly and One Step Beyond. Did you ever hear One Step Beyond?
Oh, yeah.
With John Newman. I thought that was the most classic one of all because they were based on possible true stories.
Exactly. And they were so straight-faced when he was looking you right in the camera.
Exactly. And the music was so eerie. And then it was time to go to bed. So, you know, real nice. But I just wanted to talk to you, and I said, hope to see you here in Houston or Austin again.
Yeah, just, you know, as soon as we get the date, it's going to be either toward the end of this year or next year for sure. We're going to do it.
That's great. Well, it's a pleasure talking to you again, sir.
Thanks, John.
And hope to see you then.
Okay, we'll do. We've got Barry in Rock Hill, South. No, he's not there yet. Tom's a little too quick. Greg in Gilmore, California is with us. Hey, Gregory.
Hey, George. How are you doing tonight?
Okay. How about you?
Okay. I'm listening to the rain hit the roof, and it's a nice sound. I love it.
Excellent. It is. It's got that nice sleeping sound to it.
Yes, sir. It does. Firstly, I wanted to thank you for turning us all on to Disturbed's cover of Sound of Silence.
Oh, my gosh. I play that on Sundays, the first Sunday that I'm on, and it's riveting, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And he's got such control over his voice when you watch the video. It's just phenomenal.
Yeah. I'm not sure I ever would have listened to them until I heard that song.
I agree. But, boy, they nailed that one.
Yep, they sure did.
Man, that it was really good, and I'm glad that you turned us on to it. I never would have found it or heard it otherwise.
Classic.
So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Someone asked you a short time ago about judges and the laws, judicial system and the laws.
Right.
What could be done to improve it, if anything? I can think of one thing major right off the bat.
What would you do?
I would eliminate judicial immunity.
Really? That's interesting. Tell me why.
Well, because when King George III was defeated and we gained our freedom from England, his sovereignty, his, you know, being a king, devolved to all of the people. We all of a sudden were all sovereigns. We, you know, inherited the sovereignty that he had. The only difference being none of us have subjects, right?
Yep.
But, you know, we have to have laws to control each other because we do things that are not good to each other otherwise. So we need laws and we need the courts and so on. But the judges with the judicial immunity, they are like kings, you know, like old-fashioned kings like King George was. They are immune from prosecution and
I didn't know that.
Lawsuits, yeah. You can't sue a judge and get anywhere with it if it's over something that they did on the bench. Even if what they did was a crime, they are still allowed to do it.
And I would guess there are some judges who cross the line, right?
Well, there is in this county. It's where I'm living in my car right now, actually. Judge.
No names.
Nope.
Not yet.
Anyhow, it's one judge that handles all the unlawful detainers in the county. And the moment that she realizes that you are not prepared to file an appeal, she does what she wants.
Oh, geez.
Literally denied my right to be heard.
Why are you in your car?
Because she denied my right to be heard. She wouldn't let me say as much as the guy's lying to you, repeating, and so on.
Was it like a rent dispute?
Yes. And she was very protective of the landlord's rights and gave no consideration to my rights whatsoever.
Well, that's...
Wouldn't even allow me to be heard, which is one of our most basic rights. If people didn't believe that they had a right to go into court and be heard before something could be ordered against them, we got chaos soon.
Well, thank God a few more weeks it'll be springtime, right?
Yeah.
So that'll help. Text and tweets, what do we have there, Tom?
So when we're done, you have to go to line one. You just need to do
I'd
it.
I have to?
You don't have to. You can do anything you want, but...
Oh, I know why.
So this is from Nicole in New Mexico. Love listening to Mr. Lobo. George, I want to know, do you have a favorite Western?
Favorite Western?
I think she might have heard you say, like, Westerns are out now.
I don't know if I have a favorite Western. I used to like Bonanza on television. That was fun.
Haas.
Did you like? Haas was great. They were all good.
Michael Landon, yeah.
God, I miss him. God rest his soul.
Oh, yeah.
What's the name of the father, the older guy?
Ben.
Ben Carson, but Ben no. Cartwright. Ben Carson's going to be...
Billy Carson.
Billy. Billy's going to be in Fort Lauderdale.
You're missing the greatest.
Ben Cartwright.
Ben Cartwright.
But what was his real name?
Lorne Green.
Lorne Green, that's right.
But you're missing the greatest Western of all.
Which one?
Well, we had one of the two main stars in this studio.
Pat Boone?
No. Western. And he was a kid in the Western.
Billy?
Billy? No, and he is now a big
Johnny,
band.
Johnny, oh, the Rifleman.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a classic.
By far.
That was. Okay, thanks. Let's go to Barry in Rock Hills, South Carolina. That's why you wanted me to take it, Tom. Hi, Barry.
I knew Tommy was talking about me when he said line one.
This is the night. You're going to sing a song for us, I hear.
As a matter of fact, here's the final verse of ZZ Top's Sharp Dressed Man.
All right, here we go.
It goes like this.
Are we going to have any music?
Well, I'm going to have to just add a little bit here and see what happens.
Oh, gosh. There goes my ratings again.
Here we go. Yeah, watch the ratings go down. Here it is. Top coat, top hat. I don't worry because my wallet's fat. Black shades, white gloves, looking sharp, looking for love. They come running just as fast as they can because every girl's crazy about a sharp-dressed man. Now, look out, Billy Gibbons. I'm after your job.
I think Billy has just passed out.
That's great. I heard Cornelius on there a few minutes ago. I had to call you up and say hello.
And you do know that Billy Gibbons has you singing on his smartphone.
Yeah, you told me that story. I could not believe it. I'm just absolutely blown away. And next time I see them, I'm going to introduce myself and tell them I'm a buddy of yours and Tommy.
And tell them you're on his phone.
That's right.
Because he'll play it for you. He was running around the back of the stage having all his buddies listen to you.
I'll be darned. I can't get over that, George.
Yeah, he was having a great time. Listen, this guy mentioned me on Coast to Coast. Listen to him. He's singing.
That is fantastic, George. Have a great evening, buddy. You and Tommy both, and I can't wait to hear you again next week.
Super. Okay, let's take some more calls. Let's go to Steve in Casa Grande, Arizona. Steven, welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
Boy, okay.
I can't believe I got through again. This is great.
It's timing. It's all about timing.
It sure is. Yeah, like I said before, I'm going to see you out there at Comic-Con, the UFO MegaCon.
That's going to be in Laughlin, Nevada.
That's it. I'm going to bring my Elvis suit, and we're going to
sing. That's right. That's you. Okay. Yeah.
That's me.
We're going to sing Can't Help Falling in Love.
That's it.
As a duet.
I sang that for you a while back there. But I wanted to say, I had an idea that would save us, I think it would save the nation, like millions of gallons of gas every minute. It's simple. We have the technology right now to take our picture, and give us a ticket.
Yep.
But you ever pull up to a light, like, or where you're coming up to a stoplight, and there'll be like maybe 50 cars will be coming up to that light, and then one car will come up and trigger the light and then make the 50 cars stop just so that the one car can pull out. So like all that gasoline and all them brake pads are being wasted. All that momentum. Well, why not? There should be a sensor that senses all them people coming up to that light and just let them all go through, and then the light could change, and then the one car goes through. If they did that across the nation, they would probably save 1 million gallons of gas every minute.
Interesting take. I never thought of that.
Because it happens all the time where there'll be a whole herd of cars going down the highway, and then a car will come up. You know how it triggers the light, and then the one light, you know, and then everybody has to stop for one car to pull out.
Let me ask you something. I've noticed that you've got a light that just stays red, 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 red. Then when a car comes up to it, it finally changes. It is reading the vehicle, I guess. It knows that there's a car there, right?
Yeah, it senses it, and then it activates. You have to pull up there to. That's why, if you stay back, it'll never change.
It won't see you.
It doesn't sense it. Yeah, the sensors are in the ground, but you know how like they have the technology to take your picture and send you a ticket in the mail, but they don't. If they've got that technology, then I'm sure they've got technology to see all these cars coming down the road, and then just at least wait for that whole herd of cars to go through.
That's true. How long have these sensors been around?
Forever. I mean, they've sensed streetlights. I mean, not at first when
they used to be on timers.
Yeah. Yeah. But then they fixed it, you know, because you wouldn't want it to turn red on a bunch of cars for no reason. So
that's
usually when one car pulls up.
That's a good point.
And then it senses it. But nine times out of, you know, you'll see it so many times where all these cars and semis, everybody has to stop. And then the one car pulls out, and then everybody's going to start up and go again. And think all the brake pads and all the gasoline being wasted right now as we speak across the nation.
Oh, that's a good point. Hey, thanks for that. But I knew they were on sensors. I could tell after a while. They're smart traffic lights. They've got brains. Next up, we go to Donna in Benson, North Carolina. Welcome to the program. Hi, Donna.
Hi, George. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Look, what I'm going to bring up might not make for the best weekend, but to me, this is the real horror story.
What happened?
And it's Kim Jong-un in North Korea, and what just happened, current events, is sometimes the scariest. You said you had bad feelings about North Korea right from the get-go. And what happened, especially about the Womberg kid.
Sad story. Sad story.
Well, look, here's the scary part, okay? I don't believe Donald Trump believes what he said for a second, George. I don't know, it just hits me like that, because Donald Trump is not a chump. And first of all, I didn't vote for him. Okay, I'm not, I don't have allegiance.
Well, do you think he was saying that to butter up Kim?
Look, I think Kim Jong-un is insane, and I'm talking about really bad.
Well, he had his half-brother killed off. He had one guy shot to death with some anti-aircraft gun.
Right, but he's also got nuclear weapons.
Yes, well, not quite, but he's getting close.
Well, something. And for Donald Trump to get up there and to almost baby him and take it. I don't believe that for a second. I don't believe Donald
Trump. Well, then there's a method to his madness, I hope, because if there isn't, it was a huge, huge blunder. We're going to talk about the hollow earth when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. If you've ever wondered about the hollow earth, there is one person on our planet who really investigates it, Brooks Agnew. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Brooks Agnew back with us. Now, Brooks was just with us a couple weeks ago talking about his podcast, X Squared Radio. He's been doing that for years, but we feature podcasters a couple times a month, and he was one of them. Now, he grew up in Pasadena, California. He hung around the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He entered the Air Force at the age of 17. He is an industry-changing engineer. He heads up an electric truck manufacturing company in North Carolina, and he has brought some great mysteries to this program. And he's a noted author as well. Birth, Two Earths, One Race for Time, one of his latest books. Brooks Agnew, welcome back. Hey, Brooks, good to talk to you again.
Good morning, George. How are you?
I'm great. I'm wonderful. And how did you get into the Air Force at 17? Did they let them in at that age?
Well, they did. Then I had to get a waiver. My grandfather signed for me. I took the ASVAB tests and scored really well on it. And things weren't going too well at home in those days, so it was just a good way for me to escape, I guess.
And look at you now.
Yeah, it was just nothing was planned, I will tell you that. I wanted to go to college. I knew I needed the GI Bill to do that, so I went in the service, worked my years, got my honorable discharge, went to college, used the GI Bill, and that gave me my start.
Good for you. How's the electric truck manufacturing company coming?
It's going to do better. We had last year had one of our suppliers that makes airbags fall under an unfortunate recall.
Oh, was that that Japanese company?
Yeah, Takata. A lot of people heard us.
Everybody.
Heard several other companies as well.
Jeez, so many. I mean, is that company still in existence?
I think the good parts of Takata are going to be absorbed. That's usually what happens when great suppliers like them go under. And I hope that they do, because they're a fine company, easy to work with, great technology. And it's unfortunate. It was one of those. I mean, it's a bomb in your steering wheel.
Yeah.
And we
yeah.
tried to tell the DOT about that. You know, hey, you realize that over the years, these things are going to be hydroscopic. They're going to absorb moisture and turn into little pieces of gravel. And when it does go off years down the road, it's going to hurt somebody.
Oh, just like getting hit with shrapnel, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, they didn't listen, so I think it's the DOT's fault. I think they should have left Takata alone and absorbed the loss themselves. But
that's government for you. Hey, how have you been, though? What's new?
Lots going on. This year I got very productive, and I wrote three books in 1 year. I've never done that. Usually it takes a couple of years to write a book.
Jeez.
But I got involved in this, you know, when we wrote The Ark of Millions of Years and got involved in the Hollow Earth and all of that, everything just kind of coalesced at once. And last December, well, actually a year ago December, started writing Birth Volume 1, and I finished it, published it, and I thought, well, I'll look at it again in a year. That's not what happened. This book woke me up in the middle of the night every night, and I wrote nonstop for the whole year and finished all three books in 1 year. What a ride.
You weren't channeling somebody in writing that way, were you?
Well, that's a good question.
You don't know.
It kind of felt like that. I mean, I wasn't like automatic writing where I was sitting there, you know, with my eyes half closed writing. But I will tell you that the characters in the book carried me through the story. I got to know them just like the people do that read the book. And I can tell you, it is a white-knuckle ride for 1,100 pages. It doesn't let you down. It's a great story.
Good for you. Now, what is this we hear about the possibility that there could be a planet within the planet?
Well, it's the result of an experiment that was actually done twice. The first time it was done, the temperature that they determined the core was about 1,000 degrees too cool. And it just didn't work out. The math didn't work out. It couldn't be a solid iron crystal because the temperature that it was vibrating at. So, and it was just by reason of the fact that they were passively measuring it. And so a couple of very, very talented engineers and scientists developed what's called the Anvil spectrometer, where they actually smashed a piece of iron hard enough to match the pressures that are on the inside of the planet. And they got the temperature up to where it should be, which is about 6,000 degrees C. And lo and behold, this iron crystal of the proper density formed. And it was giving off the frequency that they are reading out of the core. So now we had something that was empirical that made it at least supported the idea that there was one giant solid iron crystal in the center of the planet at 6,000 degrees C, which is, by the way, the temperature of the sun.
Oh, yeah? Well, that's pretty hot, isn't it?
It is, but it's commonplace in the universe. And iron is probably the most common element in the universe. And the fact that the core is rotating at a different speed on Earth's axis than the crust is, it acts like a giant generator, and it makes the huge magnetic field that we have around our planet. Not all planets have a magnetosphere, but we do by virtue of that counter-rotation.
Can the core stop, Brooks?
Theoretically, it can, but that's not what happens in space, and it's because of a principle called conservation of momentum. The original idea of how planets form, and we haven't actually seen it happen because we haven't been observing the universe long enough to see it happen, but we kind of see it in stages. We see accretion disks out there, and then we see early proto-solar systems, and then we see advanced solar systems and aging solar systems, and so we kind of put all the pieces together and say, now we know how planets form. But it's sort of like a giant accretion disk of dust collapsing into a group of planets. Of course, as the diameter gets smaller and smaller and smaller and it coalesces into a rock, it starts spinning very fast, just like an ice skater. You know, when she pulls her arms in, she gets going fast enough, right. She almost explodes on the ice. And that's exactly what planets do, too. They do one of three things. They either spin so fast and get so much energy in them that they explode and become like an asteroid belt, or they become lopsided in their molten state and spit off a piece of themselves like a moon, like Mercury was once a moon of Venus, or they do what Earth did, and that is they expand and cool and expand and cool and expand and cool over a period of time. And what happens is that planet slows back down again as the diameter increases, and a separation occurs between the solid core and the solid crust. So you end up with this kind of gap in between them. And it's not really a theory because we don't have enough factual evidence to back it up, but it's a great hypothesis. And we got to almost prove it when New Horizons flew by Pluto. And Pluto, we realize, is a hollow planet.
Mm-hmm.
There it is out there spinning in space.
Now, this hollow Earth theory that we have been talking about for so many years, did it start because of Admiral Byrd or even more before that?
Oh, it started a long time ago. It started actually in the Bible where it talks about tribes coming out of the north countries, out of the hollow Earth on a highway of ice. And then, Edmund Halley in 1629 came up with the theory of multiple crusts. And then Admiral Byrd, and then it was Marshall Gardner in 1965. He patented the idea of a hollow Earth and actually died on one of the voyages, got pneumonia and died. And one of my own ancestors back in 1831, Sir James Ross, was driven like a madman to find the North Magnetic Pole, and he did not succeed his first try. His ship got caught in the ice and crushed, and they had to bail out of the ship onto the ice and survive the winter and were picked up the next, you know, spring, and then he got another ship and did it again, and that time he found it.
How did he discover the North Magnetic Pole?
They used a primitive magnetometer in those days, and you just kind of follow the flux lines along the sea until you reach a point where they reach zero. In other words, all the flux lines of the planet are coming in right on top of you. And it was later verified, after we had submarines, in the early 1900s, I think it was 1937, I think, they validated the North Magnetic Pole, discovered by Sir James Ross in 1831.
Now, let's talk back about Admiral Byrd. Some of the things he saw were pretty dramatic. Occupants, prehistoric animals, UFOs.
You know, there's so much story around the story. Admiral Byrd was an aviation hero, to be sure.
He was the real deal.
He was the real deal. I mean, he took his Ford Trimotor on skis and engineer and nothing but gas and that plane. And they took off and flew what he thought was a straight path over the North Pole and back. Now, the amount of time that it took him to fly it actually did not match later flights that were done to duplicate his flight. They actually took less time to fly it. And the idea is that maybe he got off course and flew over some lush green areas, and maybe he made a mistake. It's hard to tell. There was no right. radar in those days. This is 1926. He flies the whole thing at about 2,500 feet altitude, which is...
That's pretty low, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's why he's an aviation hero instead of a statistic, because we couldn't get anybody to fly it under 17,000 feet, and that was in an old 727 jet. They wouldn't fly it any lower than that. It's pretty treacherous air
yeah,
up there.
I think so.
So then ideas came out about his voyage. A fake diary came out, and then stories came out on top of that, and then there was a whole Hollow Earth community that came out that said there were mythical cities down there and all these beings, and then the Smoky God got written. Then there was Eta Dorfa, which is Aphrodite spelled backwards. Somebody said that they walked into the inner earth from Mammoth Cave in Kentucky. So I went to Mammoth Cave, not once, but eight times I went there. And I spent time with the park managers there. And I went into all the cave systems. And the deepest cave they ever found was 366 feet. But I thought, well, maybe there was an opening. And he did actually walk in there. But if the crust is 900 miles thick, and if that cave was, let's say, at a 45-degree angle, which would be pretty darn steep, he'd be walking for 3.5 months to get to the inner earth. There's no way to carry
at that angle,
food and water. Yeah, at that angle. No way to carry enough food and water to get down there, let alone back.
But what about the stories of all these creatures and animals and things like that? Do you think they were just stories?
No, not stories. That's what's kind of cool about it. There's a lot of oceanography, the oceanography that goes with this, and a lot of ocean biology that goes with this. In 2007, we had a very weird anomaly happen in the Arctic, sort of like what's happening in the Antarctic right now. A big, huge piece of ice broke off. They call it calving. And it broke off and made the Northwest Passage navigable for the first time in, I don't know, maybe 20,000 years. That's a long time. And that same year, the next year, 2008, was the year they were going to do what's called the Ray survey, which is where they go to Manila and they take a survey of the ocean of all the different kinds of rays, that manta rays, stingrays, sand sharks, all of that. Normally, because of the proliferation of mutations in this particular species, they'll see 25 new species of rays every time they do one of these surveys. But in 2008, they found 1,500 new species of rays. And some of these were very mature, great big rays, 6-8 feet across. And we started netting things that in nets, fish nets, that had been extinct for millions of years, like a frilled shark or a dorsaled squid, live ones, fully mature, blind animals in the sea. Now, they didn't grow up in Manila. They didn't grow up in Japan where these things were netted. They came from a deeper ocean, which means that it supported the idea that there's some kind of rift or an opening in the crust where an inner ocean inside the planet is mixing with our ocean. But because that ice shelf was over all of it, none of this life mixed with our life until 2008 when that anomalous ice flow broke off. So there was a lot of evidence that pointed to the idea that there might be another ocean underneath the crust.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling, Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century. Your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Coast to Coast.
It'll be Richard Sheridan tomorrow night. I'll be on Sunday for Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Badal, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.